Stand by.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast, the podcast that rocks! Well, we don't really rock.
But you have guitars.
I have guitars here. I was threatening Gretchen that my acoustic guitar is right here. I mean, I could just bring it in and sing the show. And Gretchen said, do I have to sing too? Actually, what I told her is when she gets one of her long-ass, boring rants... I'll bring the acoustic guitar in.
About something depressing.
I'll bring in the acoustic guitar. That'll be her cue. Mm-hmm. I have a song written that goes, boring.
Stop talking.
I'm just kidding.
Stop talking.
I'm fascinated by Gretchen's stuff, actually.
Well.
So, welcome to show 51.
Yes, you passed the 50 mark, Jeff.
I was nervous about it. I didn't know if we could had any stuff in us after show 50, because it was such a festival, carnival last show. But we made it. 51. What is it? Do you ever have these numbers in your life, Gretchen, that if you have to remember it, you have no problems remembering it because you have a mental picture in your mind from something from childhood.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, 51 is one for me. It's Dick Butkus's middle linebacker for Chicago Bears. And I was a Bears fan growing up as a kid. He was the dominant force in the NFL. 51. It's always with me.
All right. Go, Dick.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I can't say that, go Dick.
This is homage to Mr. Buttress, right?
Mr. Butkus.
Butkus.
Yes.
Homage to Mr.
Homage to who?
Butkus.
You don't know your football, do you?
Well, not the Bears from the 80s, no.
No, this isn't the 80s.
Yeah,
this is the 70s. Actually, it's the late 60s.
Oh, my God.
It's really the 60s. I'm an old man.
You are.
You can't talk.
Oh, yeah, I know. I can't
talk. So, what does 51 mean to you?
Wow. Definitely heading downhill to 60.
How you think of it as age. Okay.
Age.
And I should make a very important clarification to our listeners. 51 does not represent our age. Actually, if you take our show and you divide it by 4 and then you add 7, square that and then take the cube root, you'll get to our age. It works. Try it.
Or just look at the website. Or we'll probably tell you sometime.
Yeah. It's a big secret. So I've got something to start off with.
Okay.
Yesterday was a big day. Big day for people that are involved in The Secret.
Oh, woo! Lord, The Secret. I was driving here, I noticed that one of the churches right down the street is actually talking about The Secret.
Was it the Unity Church on Greenville?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that's where I saw The Secret. They had a free showing, and I went. I went with a meetup group.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And did you ever see it?
No, I have not seen it.
I don't recommend it.
I have not seen it.
It's an hour and a half movie of which...
Science psychobabble.
Of the 90. Yes, there's absolutely no science in it whatsoever. Of the 90 minutes, there are 85 minutes that are just... You know, thinking about getting material things into your life, thinking about getting it really hard, and then, you know, woo!
And that puts out the aura, that puts out the waves that come back to you.
Right,
and
right. And it's all very scientific.
Good vibes and
what made me laugh is that there are a few times in the movie where they said, and science has proven this, you know, with various aspects. It's like, if it's so compelling, then just cite the study. I mean, come on. Science proves this.
There's nothing cited, right?
No, nothing. There's nothing cited.
There's nothing cited because maybe there isn't anything.
Yeah, right.
So you didn't walk away with that positive, powerful thinking?
No, but you
really
know.
Get yourself a new Maserati in the driveway?
Well, did you notice that new car? I thought about it.
You thought hard.
I thought, well, you know what they say, too, is that if you think about bills will come. It's true.
You know, even when I don't think about them, they come. Why is that?
That's because you're not thinking hard enough. Yeah, it's true. That's what they would say. It's a failure of you.
Of course it is.
If you get sick, it's a failure of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. If you're not wealthy beyond your means, then it's a failure of you. Anyway, so I will have to say this thing about... I saw it with a bunch of people in a meetup group, and most of the people were pretty cool. But there are a few people that, and as you can tell from all the advertising of this, that feel compelled, and I find this a very interesting human phenomena, not only do they grab onto it and they really believe it, you know, listen, some people need something in their lives. Same folks that have grabbed onto religion, or I shouldn't say everybody, I don't want to, but some people that grab onto it too heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a sure sign of it, Gretchen. You know what that sure sign of it is? They're looking for something.
What?
They feel the need to share it with everybody.
Oh.
It's this mm-hmm. evangelizing thing.
I thought you were going to say they went out and purchased additional
no.
material.
Oh my gosh, but I've started to see all this commercial.
Oh,
everything I see about The Secret is like, buy into this new class for $2,000 mm-hmm. and then you can start your own business.
You can get the ultimate secret.
Right, you get the ultimate secret, and this is, you obviously been thinking about money because this is your pathway to money. If you sell this to more people, you know, it's a big Ponzi scheme.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So yesterday they had the first online intention experiment. And what this was, everybody goes online all around the world at the same time. They log into the website and follow the instructions to send intention to a geranium leaf. Okay? If they have positive results, it'll be the first step towards showing that group intention can have a healing effect and kind of showing what the universe can do.
Okay.
So I printed this up yesterday. And actually, when I came home from the movies this afternoon, I was like, oh, shoot, they had the experiment yesterday. I better find out how it went. You know
so
how
you didn't send any intentions for the geranium leaf? You were too busy?
No.
You had a life?
Yeah. Woe is me, you know, for not sending in good vibes to that geranium leaf. So they, I did find the results today, and they said they've had a breakthrough. Now, the problem was they didn't get everybody on here to do the intentional thing because they, apparently all their servers crashed and stuff, and they just didn't have enough power. So this is ridiculous.
But if you're sending the intentions, wouldn't that make the system work?
Yes.
Because the intention is to get through to the geranium relief.
Yeah, it kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it?
Hmm.
So, and my guess, if you went into this system, you'd be, because everything else I've seen secret-wise has to do with advertising and money-making.
Mm-hmm.
So my guess is you go, my guess
is
you go in and sign up and everything, and they've got some, you know, pay $5 to,
to get the answer.
To start this. Well, the answer is, okay, they say it works. They had two geranium leaves. They punched 16 holes in each one.
Uh-huh.
They picked which one. One was a control. One was a not control.
Uh-huh.
They picked one at random. They put one on the website. I don't know, webcam or whatever. And they asked it to members to make it, photosynthesis glow, which you can detect in an electron microscope. And they said the results are amazing, and they're writing a scientific journal article about it. So I don't believe a nit of it. So, you know, science magazine editors.
Here it comes.
Here it comes. Here comes the crap. But for all of you law of attraction or secret people out there, I will share my thought on the whole thing. And that is very simply, I do believe that there is a lot to be gained from positive thinking,
mm-hmm.
the power of positive thinking. And that's not news. You know, that's not a secret, of course. We've always known this. But I do believe that. And I think a lot of people do focus on negative things in their life. And I think that does bring them down. And I do tend to think that when you focus on negative things, you kind of, I don't want to say attract those negative things, but it's hard to move.
Mm.
It's hard to move away.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think if you think about positive things, I think your mind is more open to new opportunities for finding those things for yourself. I'm not sure it's just materialistic, but and then I also believe that there is power in visualization. I mean, I always tell kids, you know, doing sports,
mm-hmm.
visualize yourself batting that ball.
Right.
You know, and I do think there's some power
running
in that.
Running through the end zone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's some really, you know, reasonable tools in this whole philosophy. But boy, they're just taking it way too far, as this is, you know, a rich and deep enough world view philosophy for everything. And it's just so shallow, and it's so indicative of where our culture is right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's so incredibly shallow. I mean, there's no talk about...
Well, there are Christian churches, too, that say that Christ wants you to be rich, and then they deliver sermons specifically to tell you why Christ wants you to drive the Mercedes.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh,
well,
yes.
The movie says Christ knew the secret.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know,
even though he owned nothing to his name.
Right.
Except the clothes he wore.
Right.
Which he ultimately did not end up with, so...
And as you know, I'm not particularly Christian, but let me tell you something. I so much more love Christianity than this, because Jesus Christ and his teachings were all about giving of yourself,
mm-hmm.
giving to the poor, giving to the needy. And I like that message so much more than this greed, message of greed, this shallow message
mm-hmm.
of greed.
Well, it's true, though, about negative thoughts, too, that you don't want to be around a bunch of people that are always a Debbie Downer,
as right.
Saturday Night Live
right.
is. You know, you just don't want to
wah, wah, wah.
That's right. Gets old after a while to always be around the whiner, the complainer, the hypochondriac.
I can't stand it. Yeah.
It gets very tiring. But at the opposite end is, you know, maybe just don't think like that, but not take it to the extreme.
Right, right.
That if I just wish hard enough, that you know, $10,000 check is going to appear in the mailbox. It
right.
is. It is.
Right.
It really
but you,
is.
It's always the sign of people that need this just too much is their desire to evangelize. Mm-hmm. It's not good enough just for them to have this
That's
own
right.
philosophy.
That's right.
They have to start rationalizing it by evangelizing it.
Well, they're sharing their secret, aren't they?
And I'm sure their rationalization is, I'm such a kind, wonderful person. I want everybody to be as happy as me.
Mm-hmm.
When I've always thought it's just I'm trying to rationalize this thing by having others believe the same thing that I do because I'm insecure in my belief. Anyways, that's deep.
So was that a waste of an hour and a half of your time?
Well, you know, it was a good discussion group afterwards. We went out and had a few drinks and discussed it with some actually reasonable, very, very nice people, and I enjoyed that. So, it wasn't a waste. I mean, you know, you got to open yourself up and see what the stuff is all about, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely been getting criticized all over mainstream media, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. But it keeps selling. It's like number one or number two on the Amazon.
I know, and it has been for a long time now.
I know.
It's just pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, what do you got for us?
Well, have you been hearing what's all this doctor has been making the rounds on the talk shows this week? He's written a book called The Male Biological Clock.
Uh-oh.
And it's ticking, boy. It's not just women's who are ticking.
Really? I haven't heard about it.
Definite evidence out there that says that men have a biological clock, too. And it's been known since the 50s, but I think it's actually getting heard right now because the scientific evidence, and he can cite lots of science here. This is not like the secret.
scientists say, but
right.
There's no studies to cite, of course.
Right. But men assume that just because they make sperm throughout their life that they have equal ability to conceive healthy children well into their 70s.
Yeah.
But that's really not true according to scientific studies that are being published now.
Hey, I'm one step ahead. I got mine frozen.
Did you get it frozen?
Yes.
Have you heard about people freezing their dog sperm too?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do that too.
Do you?
Oh, I got a bunch of
dog.
I'm just kidding, of course. Why would you freeze your dog sperm so you could have puppies based on your
from
dog?
The dog. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, back to the men.
Yes, please. I'm just kidding about my own sperm being frozen, too.
Oh.
I once had it in there. A friend of mine came over for a party, used it for ice cubes. It was bad.
Bad scene.
Let's not go there.
age actually makes it harder for men to produce sperm that's able to conceive a child. And more importantly, studies are suggesting that the risk of birth defects rises the older the father is.
By the way, I just have a vision in my head. You ever see Woody Allen's Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex?
Yes.
I have visions of these like geriatric guys with canes getting ready to, we're ready to go.
That's right.
Dressed up like little sperms.
Their little sperms.
They can't really run very far.
They can't.
They can't. They're hooked up to pacemakers and walkers and stuff. Poor little guys.
Okay, well, those men over 40, are nearly six times more likely to father an autistic child than men under 30. And schizophrenia is more prevalent in children fathered by older men.
Wow.
Just like the link between a mother's age and Down syndrome has long been suspected.
Oh, is that right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
So now the father's age is part of the equation, and because now people are having children at an older age, this is becoming more of a factor. And I think that's why people are talking about it more.
Yeah. So since 45 is a new 25.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
It's like,
and there is all kinds of scientific evidence to say that the reason this is the genetic makeup of men's sperm and how many times it splits. And the more time it splits as you get older, the greater chance of genetic deviations open the doors to birth defects. And there is also a thing called a male menopause too, which this same doctor talks about, this Harry Fitch from the University of Columbia Medical Center.
They happen to all be women doctors, I'm sure.
No.
Male menopause.
Him.
Oh, yeah, make us feel emasculated. Come on.
It doesn't happen at a particular age. It happens when testosterone levels drop.
I got a key for you. I don't menstruate.
Yeah, but you do have some testosterone. And as soon as it goes down, then the symptoms are weight gain, low sex drive, ED, infertility, decreased muscle mass, excessive tiredness, and depression. And so he says the key to remedying it is increased testosterone levels.
How do you do that? Like, I mean,
so you can go get drugs.
Really? Do they actually recommend that? Mm-hmm. Isn't that sort of like it's juicing like, or?
Is no,
that,
no, not.
It's
not that.
I know it's not steroids, but
right, it's not. He says rather rather than go buy a new Porsche, he says go have your testosterone levels checked.
But let's go look at this. I mean, isn't that just a natural part of aging?
Uh-huh, but he says you can stave it off longer and you don't have to go through this.
Okay.
This depression.
Yay! Right? I'm a newly discovered man.
Some of the interesting facts, though, men with large bellies will have lower testosterone levels than men with a flat stomach. And the size of testicles matters.
Really?
That is correlated to the size of your to the amount of testosterone in your body.
Huh.
And men who
How do you ever get that checked? Because, I know what mine feel like, but I have no idea how that compares. No clue. Right? I mean.
Well, he's a urologist. Perhaps you might want to talk to your urologist about it.
You know, I might. How do these compare? I mean, what the heck? It's science.
That's
it's
right.
Science.
Yeah. So, see, he actually calls the phenomenon when men say they're bored with their careers, their wives, and general lot in life, they're actually suffering from low testosterone. He calls that phenomenon menoporsche because he sees guys go out and buy a new Porsche instead of going to get a shot of testosterone.
So what happens when a woman buys a Porsche? What does that signify?
I have no idea.
Gretchen has a Porsche.
I have no idea.
A very, very sporty one.
Moving on. Where's that guitar?
Where's your testosterone, baby?
I am competitive.
Okay, that must be it.
That's it. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much, and long last love has arrived, and I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true, can't take my eyes off of you. Caught in the way that I stare, there's nothing else to compare. The sight of you leaves me weak, there are no words left to speak. But if you feel like I feel, please let me know.
All right. Well, this is allergy season. Do you get allergies?
I see him sneezing a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. This is allergy season prime.
I outgrew most of them, though, as a kid. So.
Well, Dallas is known to have one of the worst allergy seasons in America, from what I understand. And I'm lucky that I really haven't had too much. Maybe real mild symptoms. But for those of you in the area and suffering, I wanted to share something that I found on the net. And even though I don't suffer from this, I tried it because I was so intrigued by the whole thing. Have you ever heard of these sinus nasal irrigation systems?
No, you were talking about this last time. Did you actually do it?
Oh, did I talk about this in the last podcast?
You were telling us you were about to do it.
Oh, okay.
Did you do it?
Yes, I did it.
And?
And it's kind of weird because you're just pouring something in one nostril and it comes out the other nostril and... You know, it kind of feels weird, but I woke up
It sounds weird too, Joe.
But I woke up this morning and I tried it because I was a little stuffy and it's cleared out. I mean, it's supposed to be very, very good for you.
You said singers do it, right?
Yeah, supposedly so, every day to kind of keep from being sick and keep their, you know, their voice sounding good.
Why don't you keep doing it and give us a report in a couple of weeks?
Well, I'm not going to do it every day. I just kind of do it for fun. I don't even need
it.
Oh,
you do it for fun?
I do it. Yeah, because I do it for science.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
I do it for this show. I do it for science. I can't say it feels really good, but it doesn't hurt or anything. It's just, you
weird.
Know, it's just a weird sensation. Yeah. Yeah. So, I can't believe I talked about that last week.
Oh, I remember.
Where is my brain?
I remember.
Okay.
Hey, here's a new trend. Do you know anybody who's a personal chef or a chef in a restaurant?
No, but you know, I did meet a personal concierge who runs a personal concierge business the other day, and I thought that was intriguing.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting.
Yeah, anyways.
But anybody who is actually a chef, if you've ever known them, you know they work really long hours, and it's really grueling work. It's really hot. You stand all the time. You work about 12 hours. The pay's not that great. It's just really a tough job. I mean, you think about it, you go out to a nice restaurant at night, but you're only like seeing them at a fraction of the hours that they're actually working because they have to prepare the food, they have to buy the food. It's really a demanding career. And Anthony Bourdain's book, Kitchen Confidential, really tells you the whole lowdown on what it's like to be a chef. But there's a new trend that I thought was really interesting, and this was reported in the Wall Street Journal. It is now the rise in private chefs. And private chefs are different than a personal chef because a private chef is employed by one family, whereas a personal chef would have a small business and cater to multiple families.
Okay.
But the rise in the number of private chefs is, in the past couple years, it's doubled, and there's now 2,000 just from this one private placement firm alone.
Wow.
And the growth is coming from a rise in wealth and also a rise in personal taste and the desire for fine cuisine at home. So all more of these people, the chefs, are leaving restaurants to go to mansions, and they're making a lot more money, and they're working a lot less hours.
Wow.
And so it's becoming a
I would love it, too, from a healthy perspective, because you could say no trans fat.
That's right.
Only organic.
Right.
You know?
Right. So that usually they earn 25.
And they could make it taste great.
That's right. 25 to 50% more, shorter hours. They work with budgets that are really unlimited. Whereas in a restaurant, they have to work within a really tight budget because they have to hit a price point.
Right.
So this article interviewed a few of these chefs, and they talked about some of the things that they've been required to do. This one chef said that he had to do a luncheon on a Thursday, then dinner for 30 people on a Friday, then fly to another one of the your owner's homes in another state and prepare dinner for 50, but he had to make sure that the kids still had food and there was no margin for error. And also, variety was important to this family. The chef was never allowed to cook the same meal twice. So in 2.5 years,
wow,
had to come up with new meals all the time. And then the diets are also an issue because they would say that a lot of these people would be on a different diet like every other week. They'd be changing diets.
Gosh.
So these chefs would be reading
That's
the
a real
new cookbooks.
Challenge.
It was a real cookbook. And then they said sometimes they were used to this one man left a famous restaurant in San Francisco, A16, and he's a private chef for a well-known New York artist now. But he said their taste leaned to chicken fingers and breaded fish.
But homemade breaded fish, right?
He just cannot make anything that he really wants to make because all they want are chicken fingers and breaded fish. So said it's been really interesting, and sometimes they're asked to do other things which they never thought they would had to do before. Like sometimes they're a waiter, sometimes they mix drinks, sometimes they're the maitre d', and they've never really had to interact with the public like that.
Wow.
And sometimes they're required to do that. And then the one woman who had the absolute horror story said she was required to not only feed the family, but she had to feed the dog and feed the pet rat snake by going to PetSmart and purchasing goldfish. She actually got reprimanded when she bought the wrong color of fish, and
really,
that's when she quit. So there can be the employers from hell, just as there would be anywhere. But
wow,
take note, if you've got really rich friends, they might want their own personal chef.
I want my own personal chef.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Private chef, excuse me.
Private chef. That would be really weird.
Wouldn't that be wild?
Yeah.
Your own chef.
Yeah.
But it could be. You could have amazing food. You're right. I mean, if you really had a great palate and you were open to anything,
yeah,
that would be awesome.
And they would go down to the farmer's market every
and
day.
Buy everything fresh.
Everything fresh. Gosh. Organic.
Oh, yeah, they typically make about $70,000.
Okay.
So if you've got an extra $70,000
per year,
employ them. There
that's
you go.
For like 15 years?
70 to 120, depending on where there are.
I don't even need fancy gourmet food necessarily. I just need decent
food.
Quality, healthy food
that
really tastes nice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like steak and potatoes, and I like the fancy food too, but I'm good with both. Talking about fancy food.
Yes.
There's a book called The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan.
Okay.
And he's talking about the changing eating habits of America.
And
he uses an example of, his thesis is, over the last 30 years, we have become a nation that eats vast quantities of corn, much more so than Mexico ever did, who was, of course, the original corn people. And
more potatoes, too.
Well, I don't have his take on potatoes, but that may be
very
well be true.
Because it's the number one vegetable because of
French fries.
Yeah,
probably makes sense.
So
and
we eat a lot more corn.
We eat a lot more corn, which is really interesting. We've talked about corn before in terms of alternative fuel and so forth and ethanol. But did you know that the McDonald's Chicken McNugget is 56% corn?
That would make sense.
So let me, and he goes into, I'm going to go into some of those details about what goes into a McNugget for all you people eating McNuggets right now.
And it was also Fast Food Nation called out what was in a McNugget.
Oh,
too.
It did.
Like, uh-huh.
Well, it's got all 38 ingredients that make up a McNugget. Let's see.
Most of them you can't pronounce, right?
Right.
Monosodium glutamate.
Right. There's at least 13 of these 38 that are derived from corn, including the corn-fed chicken itself. But there's modified corn starch. There's monotri and diglycerides, which are emulsifiers, which keeps the fat and water from separating when cooking.
Mm-hmm.
There's dextrose, lecithin, chicken broth. And chicken broth is basically there to restore some of the flavor that all this processing leaches out. Yellow corn flour and more modified corn starch for the batter. Corn starch, a filler. Vegetable shortening, partially hydrogenated corn oil, which is something I actually look to avoid in everything I eat because that's really nasty stuff. Citric acid as a preservative. Now, it gets even worse here. There's
those are the good things?
Yeah, those are actually the somewhat natural, normal things. Then there's a bunch of synthetic things here, which are quasi-edible. They include, they come from the petroleum refinery. Let's see, listed first are the leavening agents. There's sodium aluminum phosphate, monocalcium phosphate, sodium acid pyrosphate, and calcium lactate. And these are antioxidants added to keep the various animal and vegetable fats involved in a nugget, in the nugget from turning rancid.
Oh, God.
And then this gets really gross. There are anti-foaming agents.
That wasn't the gross part?
Yeah, well, it gets grosser. Anti-foaming agents like D-methyl polysoxine added to the cooking oil to keep the starches from binding to air molecules so as to produce foam during the fry. Now, according to the Handbook of Food Additives, dimethyl polysiloxane, which is what I just mentioned, is a suspected carcinogen and an established mutagen, tumorigen, which sounds like tumor, and reproductive effector. It's also flammable. Okay, but the most alarming ingredient in a McNugget is called tertiary butyl hydroxyquinone, or as we know in the industry, TBHQ. This is an antioxidant derived from petroleum. Oh, that's gross right there. That is either sprayed directly on the nugget or the inside of the box, Gretchen, that it comes in to help, quote, help preserve freshness. Now, the Consumer's Dictionary of Food Additives, TBHQ is a form of butane. It's like
lighter fluid.
Exactly like lighter fluid. The FDA allows processors to use this sparingly in our food. It can only comprise of no more than 0.02% of the oil in a nugget. But apparently, if you have even a little bit more than that, it can cause nausea, vomiting, ringing in the ears, delirium, a sense of suffocation, and collapse. So I guess if you ate a lot of boxes.
That was like supersize me. He got sick after 30 days.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Oh.
So these
so
are.
What, so what else is this? This omnivore book is talking about we're eating more corn, but just in always in a bad form.
Well,
like this? And also like, do we more corn on the cob maybe from street festivals?
I think that would be a healthy way to do it. I think his point, and I don't know, I haven't read the book, but I think the point is that more than what you think, corn is getting into our products in not very good ways.
Very well.
And you know, corn is fine. It's a grain. It's a natural grain, but it's processed grain. And corn is known to be not one of the great whole grains to eat. I mean, it's not bad in anything in moderation, right?
Right.
But it's just gone a little bit of excess.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yummy. Well, are you gonna run out and buy some chicken McNuggets?
I know. I was gonna buy some to share, and we could eat them during the show.
Ooh.
Let's see if we smell butane.
Yummy, yummy. Hey, I know you like follow the stock market, but you want to turn you want to turn a quick profit, like really quick. You know what you can do?
I already got the secret.
What?
The secret.
The secret? Well, there's one other thing you can do. You can run down to your local Target store.
Okay.
You can buy a particular type of blouse for $35.
Okay.
You can run home to eBay. You can put it on, and you can make a 629% profit in 1 week.
How?
You can actually sell that blouse for $255 that you paid $35 for.
And why would there be a $255 market?
Oh, because this is a really interesting phenomena. This is the trend of reselling clothing. It's now changing. Least expensive goods are seeing big jumps in value in online auction sites, letting shoppers scalp hot ticket items from hot retailers that have hot designers in for a limited time. So Madonna is doing a line for H&M, and so Madonna's clothes for H&M are only going to be in the store for a limited period of time, and believe it or not, people are going in, buying them, turning around, reselling them, and just pocketing the money.
Huh.
And the whole idea was to take the designer labels, make them more affordable for the masses by going into these sort of lower mid-tier stores like Target and H&M. And here was another example, a Stella McCartney sweater dress. Excuse me. Stella McCartney sweater dress sold in H&M in 2005. It went for 6 times its original price on eBay in January.
Wow.
Or a Roland Mulet dress that sold for $108 at the Gap, appreciated 100% in January. Now, this isn't every single line. But
now, they're appreciating because they're taken off the market.
Well, because they're a limited edition.
They're a limited edition.
Limited edition, and they're only going to be in there pretty quickly.
And what's the motivation for the designer to have a limited edition, especially now that they know that there's a big aftermarket resale that they don't get a part of?
That's absolutely right. It seems like that is a problem, even though Target and H&M are not discouraging it, because they say there's no laws against reselling clothing.
Right.
if you go to eBay, the most searched terms in apparel and shoes are Coach, Louis Vuitton, Abercrombie and Fitch, and Chanel. How the heck did A&F get in there? Oh, it's just unbelievable. So now with these limited edition designer clothes can fetch far above their original values on eBay because they're novelties and they sell out quickly at retail. You literally can't get them, so there is some scarcity.
Okay.
So this one woman in Houston decided she was going to make a quick profit, but she had to strike early, and she didn't quite strike early enough. She went out, spent $2,000 at a Target store to buy these 55 Puenza Schuller blouses, but she missed the peak of the frenzy, and so far she's only been able to sell 30 of them, and she's only sold them at $8 more than what she paid. So now she knows next time, before Target comes out with a limited edition designer, she's going to be there the first day the goods hit the store, and she's going to turn around and try and make a killing. But that is now the new way to resell clothing.
So how can,
which is pretty remarkable, considering it defeats the purpose of having a $35 designer dress or gown in one of these lower retail stores.
How does one know that these are going to, I guess, you can keep your ear in the financial industry and they let you, it's public information.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do advertise it. Like Target was advertising.
Yeah.
And H&M made a big deal when Stella McCartney hit. But they also.
But I mean, this woman who's going to wait a day for the shipment to come in.
She's got to figure it out. She's probably going to have to check with the store manager to keep seeing when it's going to hit.
Yeah.
But not every designer has been successful like this. Like Karl Lagerfeld and Victor and Rolf did their own designers for different stores and they didn't fetch anything on eBay. So it's very fickle too, which is typical of fashion. So,
right.
I thought that was pretty interesting. You want to make a quick buck? Head down to Target.
You know, that's not a bad way to make it.
Better than The Secret. Actually, it's probably a little more profitable.
Yeah, I'm sure.
My belly overwhelmed by what I had been chosen to perform. But then an angel came one day, told me to.
Well, I wanted to share some news about divorce.
Okay.
Since this is a common theme,
you know,
the demographics of people our age and so forth on this show. But I've got a number of divorce myths and facts, and some of these are going to surprise you, Gretchen. All right. Divorce myth one, because people learn from their bad experiences, second marriages tend to be more successful than first marriages. That's not true. In fact, I saw a statistic on a different article that said the percentage of first marriages that end in divorce, this is back in 1997, is 50. Today it's about 43%, they say. But that was 50. And the percentage of remarriages that end in divorce in 1997, same year, was 60%. So they said, although many people who divorce have successful subsequent marriages, the divorce rate of marriages is in fact higher than that of first marriages. Divorce myth number two, living together before marriage is a good way to reduce the chances of eventually divorcing. Many studies have found that living together before marriage have a considerably higher chance of eventually divorcing, actually. They're not really quite understanding of the reason, but here's some speculations. The type of people who are willing to cohabitate may also be those who are more willing to divorce. In other words, life is a little more temporary.
Mm-hmm.
There's some evidence that the act of cohabitation itself generates attitudes in people that are more conducive to divorce. So the attitude that relationships are temporary can easily be ended. So it's kind of counterintuitive. Let's live together. Let's make sure this works. You know, it doesn't really seem to be to work. Divorce may cause problems for many of the children who are affected by it, but by and large, these problems are not long-lasting and the children recover relatively quickly. That's actually, they've had lots of studies on this because, as you can imagine, it's a big social phenomenon, and people need to understand it a little bit more. So there's strong evidence, both from small studies and very large-scale, large-term empirical studies, that many problems that children have are actually long-lasting. They may even become worse in adulthood for children of married divorced folks.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce myth 4, having a child together will help a couple to improve their marital satisfaction and prevent the divorce.
Oh my God, who would even think to do that?
I know. Many studies have shown that the most stressful time in a marriage is actually after the first child is born. Okay. Following divorce, the woman's standard of living plummeted by 73%, while that of a man's improved by 42%. Now, I think this is mostly a financial measure of some sort.
This is a myth?
That's a myth.
Wow.
It's still off, but the actual numbers, they say the woman's loss is 27%. Again, this is a loss for a standard of living.
Mm-hmm.
The woman's loss is 27% and the man's gain was 10%. So it's not nearly as severe as what was once thought, which probably is in keeping with the more equality of the sexes. And independent women, career-minded women, and all that. When parents get along, children are better off if their parents divorce and they stay together. That's a myth. They said a recent large-scale long-term study suggests otherwise. So I won't get into the details of that, but they say basically if parents don't get along, it's not better off
to stay together for the kids.
Yeah, it's actually better off to stay together for the kids.
It is.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Let me make sure I get this right. Children are better off if their parents divorce and if they stay together. So, yeah, they're better off if they stay together.
Wow.
And not get divorced.
Wow.
Yes, that's a myth. I mean, that's true. So because they are more cautious in entering, or divorce myth 7, because they are more cautious in entering marital relationships and also have a strong determination to avoid the possibility of divorce, children who grew up in a home broken by divorce tend to have as much success in their own marriages as those from intact homes. And they say marriages from children of divorces actually have a much higher rate of divorce than the marriages of children from intact homes. Which that doesn't surprise me so much, I guess. Another myth, following divorce, the children involved are better off in step families than in single-person families.
No.
Now, this is something I don't think the Republicans would like to hear because it's all
goodness.
About mom and dad, right? But the evidence suggests from lots of studies that step families are no improvement over single-parent families, even though typically income levels are higher and there is a father figure in the home. Step families, the offsetting of that is step families tend to have their own set of problems, including interpersonal conflicts with the new parent figures and a very high risk of family breakup. Divorce myth number 9, being very unhappy at certain points in a marriage is a good sign that the marriage will eventually end in divorce. And that's a myth because all marriages have their up and downs. And recent research, this is kind of interesting, using a large national sample, found that 86% of people who were unhappily married in the late 80s and stayed with the marriage indicated when interviewed 4 years later that they were happier. In fact, 3/5 of the formerly unhappily married couples rated their marriages as either very happy or quite happy.
Wow. So they worked through it.
They worked through it, and it's an indication that there's ups and downs in marriages, and
it's
okay.
Mm-hmm.
The final divorce myth, it's usually men who initiate divorce proceedings. As it turns out, 2/3 of all divorces are initiated by women. One recent study found that many of the... Actually, that doesn't surprise me because, you know... I've always observed that
women will take charge.
Yes.
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 Absolutely.
They're more assertive about what they want than I think men sometimes are kind of go-alongers.
Well, it also involves doing paperwork and actually, in a lot of cases, contacting a lawyer. So.
Right. Right. That's exactly
and
right.
And it's not pleasant. So, I read something about like when you're in your 20s and get married, the chance of divorce is 85% or something. It's so high.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The younger you are, the correlation is much higher for divorce.
Well, this is a statistic that I just found fascinating. It's not really related to the divorce thing, but sort of. Did you know that 40% of men and women, this is married men and women, no, I'm sorry, it's any men and women, 40% of both men and women say they spend at least 2 hours every day thinking about their current or potential relationships. And here's a scarier fact. About 10% of us spend more than 6 hours every day doing so, according to a national poll.
I wonder what's defined as thinking about. Is that like if you're having dinner with or you're watching TV with? Or does that mean you're thinking about?
Thinking about. That means you're thinking about. That means your aunt probably well, from what I've
how
seen,
exactly
analyzing.
Do you work
there
eight
are
hours?
Some people that you have in your life, I'm sure, that you talk to them, and within 5 or 10 minutes, it's always about this ex or this person in their life that's driving them nuts, and you want to say, why don't you just stop that?
I know. That's true. But how many people are they saying think about that? I mean, don't people have to work, and don't they have like to pay attention on the road?
10% of us spend more than 6 hours every day thinking about their current or potential relationships.
Oh, well.
40% spend at least 2 hours every day.
Wow.
Yeah, that's very strange. That's whacked.
That's a tough one. Yeah.
Hard to believe. And I don't know, how do you prove that?
Yeah,
where's the
how
science?
How do you prove that? Yeah.
What, do they have these guys hooked up to electrodes? And even if they had that, how would you know if they're thinking about their former lover?
Well, along that same vein, I talked last time about that rich guy's hot chick dating service
yeah.
that got together.
Yeah.
Well, now there is a website out there specifically for pretty people and only pretty people.
Really?
Yes, and it's called hotenough.org. It's for fit, good-looking people, not for the average single.
Oh, I need to get in on that.
Look, check it out. There's their front page. Okay.
Hot.
And here's the first line. Why hot enough? Attractive, fit singles like you deserve an above average dating pool, and the leading online dating sites just don't meet that demand. So what they're really saying is there's just not enough hot looking people to be matched up with the hot looking people if you just go to a regular website.
Right.
So what these guys wanted you to do is join their website where you actually have to be rated by members who are already on it.
Right.
And you have to rate higher than an 8.
Wow.
Whoa. But once you're in, you're permitted to email other hotties for $9.95 a month.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
That's amazing. So,
because they think most internet dating sites are just loaded with brave and desperate people.
Wow.
But not particularly attractive ones. So in a couple months, their membership is around 1,000 people. And now 25% of the applicants are making the grade and getting in. And you have to submit 3 pictures, including 1 full body shot. So there you have it. This one woman who decided she was a blogger and she thought she wanted to do it so she could get a good story. She considered herself an 8 or 9.
Yeah.
She got a 5.7.
So she was not accepted.
That kind of hurts. But some psychologists said that people tend to end up with partners who match themselves in physical attractiveness. So this actually makes a little bit of sense. I will say I want to just see what they look like. And I've got to say, if you're 20
yeah.
and you are a model, you can just go to hotenough.org. And
but here's the rub.
Find your soulmate.
Here's the rub. If you're in your 20s and you're a woman and you look like a model, don't need it.
You don't really need that. Yeah.
Don't need it.
But then again, there were a lot of men who had their shirts off showing their six packs.
Right. Or same thing with men.
They look like but apparently they do because they work really hard and they don't know where to go to meet these other
hotties. I was at Dragonfly on Friday night meeting some friends, and I saw two attractive women at the bar, and there were these two, you know, attractive guys that were from another party because I was next to them and I overheard them. They just came up. The girls were excited to talk to them. The guys were excited to talk to them. Good-looking people find each other, and I don't think it's that hard. I don't think the criteria is, like, super high except for physical. But I question the business model, I guess, is what I'm doing.
Well, we'll see how long it lasts.
We ugly people need the freaking internet dating service.
Well, I don't know. Just forget. There just
no,
aren't
I'm just
any.
Kidding.
There
I'm
any,
not ugly.
There aren't any people
I won't
in
speak
their
40s. For Gretchen.
There you go. There just aren't any people in their 40s on it. So there you go.
Where are they?
Got to be young. I don't know. That's a legitimate business model, I guess.
Where are there 40s people in this?
No, that's what I'm saying. They were all in their 20s.
There. So as
to
we,
me,
are
they
we,
all
are
look
we,
like they were 20.
I mean, there's hot people in
there
their 40s.
There absolutely are, but I know they're not on that site. Well, thank goodness, because the 20-year-olds wouldn't want the 40-year-olds.
No, but the 40-year-olds would want the 40-year-olds, you'd think. Well, maybe that's not true either, based on your other rich men, hot women.
Mm-hmm.
But this site doesn't allow rich men?
No, they're not looking for rich men. You just got to be attractive.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Well, I'll be joining that, and I'll let you guys know what my experience is. All right, well, now that we're talking about good-looking people, let's talk about sex.
Okay.
Because I have 10 things that you might not know about sex, Gretchen.
Okay.
If I can stump you, then I will really...
Well, we should have saved that with the evidence of the male biological clock ticking, but okay.
Yeah, we probably should have,
all
but
right.
We don't do anything in logical sequence on this show. Why start now? Okay, the typical lovemaking session. I love that term, the lovemaking session. Shall we have a lovemaking session now, dear?
11 minutes.
Actually, it's 15 minutes. It's roughly 10 to 12 minutes of foreplay, if you're lucky. And about 3 to 5 minutes of intercourse.
I think it depends on what country.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I had heard once.
Oh, that's interesting.
Countries.
Mm-hmm. Humans aren't the only horny members of the animal kingdom doing it just for fun. There's only two other kinds of animals that this they cite is dolphins and a certain type of chimpanzee have sex just for fun. And so that's good to know that we're not alone. Now, Viagra has made the erectile dysfunction, ED, you know, a household phrase almost.
Right.
But this is interesting. The opposite problem, premature ejaculation, is more common, and it affects 24 to 27% of men. In fact, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is currently reviewing a new drug. Of course, we have to have a drug to fix everything.
Right.
Called Depakotine as a cure for this problem. Now, all I'm saying is I really don't want this drug on the market because all of a sudden, women's expectations are going to be, you know, to go for 15, 30, 45 minutes of intercourse. I'm sorry. I just want to do it the old-fashioned way. I just don't want that kind of pressure. Well, he's on Depakotine. You know, it's the same fear that the old ladies have of their old men trying to jump them with Viagra. All right, crank up the thermostat. Orgasms may be more intense in warmer conditions. The degree of vasocongestion, reddening or darkening of the skin, known as sex flush, is both more common in warmer temperature and an indication of how intense an orgasm may be. Did you know that?
That makes sense, though.
See, you're learning
that
things.
That makes sense, yeah.
This is another weird thing. If a woman experiences orgasm during sex, she is more likely to become pregnant. Since orgasmic spasms and pelvic muscles help move sperm up the vaginal canal to
the
uterus.
Makes sense.
How about that?
There you go.
See, these are the things they don't teach you in sex ed.
That's right. But it all makes sense when you think about it.
Yeah. Homosexuality is not unique to humans. Now, that doesn't surprise. I mean, we all knew that, I think. Many species have been observed engaging in homosexual activity. And in fact, male bats actually have the highest rate of homosexuality in all mammals.
Huh.
On any given day, there are 400 million people around the world, 1/17 of us, that are doing it. Broken down further, 4,000 people are having sex at any given time. So right now, as we speak, 4,000 people around the world are having sex.
There you go. And I wonder how many are having children then. Will ultimately become pregnant.
Well,
I wonder what that rate is.
That would be interesting. Sex cures headaches. Endorphins released into our bloodstream when we have sex not only give us pleasure but act as painkillers. So that's useful information.
I think you mentioned that before, that you can't use it as an excuse to not have it.
I have a headache.
Right.
No, that's exactly the reason you should be having it.
That's right.
This is kind of scary. Many elderly people can and do have frequent sex.
I've heard that, actually.
At age 70, 73% of males are still potent. Now, this kind of conflicts with all the stuff about Viagra and ED and what was the other one? Pre-ejaculation, premature ejaculation. But 73% of males are still potent, and 30% of women 80 or older still have sex. 30% of women 80 and older still have sex.
Wow.
I find that amazing.
Grandma.
I don't know if I believe it. Of course, it doesn't say what frequency they're having sex.
That's true. Yeah.
70% of women would rather eat chocolate than have sex. How about that, guys? You think you're so hot?
Bring the chocolate to bed, guys. God. Creative.
Give her the best of the both
That's
worlds.
Right.
Don't be offended if she goes for the chocolate first.
Chocolate syrup and whipped cream. There you go.
Exactly. Well, it doesn't say whipped cream here. But if she goes for the chocolate before she goes for your penis, don't be offended, guys. It's all science.
Well, don't they make chocolate panties, too? There you go. Kill the two birds with one stone.
I'm sure they do. I used to experiment with that stuff in college. Those edible undies. It's such a gimmick. So stupid.
But. Like a fruit roll up in your body.
Yeah, exactly.
Since you were looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins. Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gon' pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, then you probably can. Talking out your neck, saying you're a Christian, a Muslim, sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in.
Well, I mentioned about the spray-on condom last week, and I found the details
on
it.
Oh, good.
It's coming out in 2008. It will be here. And it's going to be a can-type device that sprays latex from all sides. It's like a 360-degree procedure. So in the heat of the moment, it takes works in 5 seconds, and it's especially convenient.
It works in 5 seconds.
It works
now,
in 5 seconds. You just spray it on. And
so what if the man is not completely ready to go?
Well, you gotta wait till you're ready to go.
Just like a condom.
Wait till you're ready to go and spray it on. And it'll be a custom fit and it won't slip. And it'll be on the market in 2008, sold in different strengths and
colors.
Actually,
I got to tell you, I think that's a great idea.
And it's based on the spray-on plasters that are now used in medicine.
Plaster.
That's where it's coming from, yeah. That's where the concept comes from.
So do they have any kind of predicted failure rate?
No, it's going to be a thing. They may have to make sure you spread it evenly, or it could not be as effective as it's supposed to be.
That's kind of difficult because then, I mean, it's like, could you put on like double the amount?
And
suffocate the poor little guy.
Poor little guy. I suppose you could.
Not in my case.
Okay. And actually, in China, since 2005, there has been a liquid condom that women have been using. It's kind of like a antiseptic foam spray.
It's called their mouth. Ho, hey, ho.
Forms a physical membrane inside the vagina. So all around the world, there's all different things out there. Go figure.
Scientists.
We just don't hear about it.
Science. Solving our problems.
Blinded us with science. That's right.
Well, I wanted to share some cultural things that I've been doing.
All right.
First of all, I saw a play at the Dallas Theater Center last night called Fences. And it's a very, very good play. I think it's still playing for a little bit, Gretchen, if you do get a chance. But it was written by a fellow named August Wilson. And it's very, very interesting what this man has done. He actually died at the early age of 55 from cancer just last year. He's got a theater in New York named after him.
Wow.
He's so revered.
Wow.
But this is what he did, Gretchen. He wrote basically 10 cycles of different plays, and they're all self-standing, to represent the plight of Black Americans in every decade of the 20th century.
Wow.
And the play that I saw last night called Fences occurred during the 50s. And it was a fascinating play.
Oh, so one play doesn't cover all the decades. It's one play
per decade.
Okay.
One per decade. So the play last night is so wonderfully acted about this guy who used to play for the Negro Baseball League, and apparently very, very good, but it was before sort of you could do anything with that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was kind of washed up, and he had carried a lot of resentment towards his family about that, and he had a couple sons that were, really doing well, and he would sort of stop them from playing sports and getting scholarships and things like that. And very complex picture of a man who had a lot of good in him and a lot of awful stuff in him too. But very, very gripping play, and I'd highly recommend it to anybody. And this August Wilson just sounds like a fascinating guy.
Wow.
Very talented. So I enjoyed that very much. As you know, the AFI, which stands for...
American Film Institute.
Yes, American Film Institute. I did not write that down. I should have. Is in Dallas, and this is, if you've been reading my blog, this is one of the, I think it's the biggest film festival ever to occur in Dallas. I've been to 2 movies so far. First movie I saw was The Night of the White Pants, which I loved. This is directed by Dallas native Amy Talkington, starred Tom Wilkinson. Many of you out there may not know that name, but he's a big star and you'd recognize him. He was in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. He was in The Girl with Pearl Earrings. He was in The Bedroom, which was a great movie, I thought. So he's really known in the indie movies, and you probably would recognize him.
Yeah.
It also starred 2 Dallas natives. Neil Stahl? Oh, gosh. I didn't write his name down. The guy that was in Carnival, HBO's Carnival. The young guy. Stahl is the last name.
Okay.
And Janine Turner from that
TV show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was great. In fact, I thought it was every bit as good as Little Miss Sunshine. It was about a very eclectic family. and sort of about what happened, transpired, and essentially one night of their lives, one really, truly whacked out and funny night of their lives. Their house is in Swiss Avenue. You see all over Dallas. I mean, so Dallas, it's not even funny. And they even mention it. They talk about Dallas, you know.
Uh-huh.
And
so Dallas is like a character.
It really is a character.
Uh-huh.
And it's a great movie. And the thing that's interesting about the movie industry, it's got Nick Stahl, that's his name. It's got the big names. I mean, they're not nobodies. Mm-hmm. Tom Wilkinson especially. It's, I thought, fantastic. A lot of funniness and, you know, an ending that was very appropriate. And I think she had a Q&A afterwards, and she's shown it like 6 film festivals and no distributor so far.
Really? Well.
And you know, the success of Little Miss Sunshine, which is a great movie.
Right.
I really enjoyed it. It was tremendous. And that this movie may never see the light of day.
Wow. Not even right to video.
Well, I suppose it could. I you know, I don't know how that stuff works. I don't know enough about the industry.
Wow.
But I thought it was fantastic.
Wow.
Hmm. I just saw this afternoon Who Loves the Sun, and I'm not sure what I think about this movie. It was a family picture. So much stuff happens in the course of 2 or 3 days that they're sort of discovering about themselves. And people sort of don't act naturally, like, gee, that person wouldn't act like that.
Uh-huh.
It was a nice emotional story, complex characters, but characters that didn't quite seem reasonable. Their actions didn't quite seem reasonable. And some of the circumstances that things that they found out about their, cut these two families were just so over the top. So I kind of enjoyed sitting there watching it, but I have to say, coming out of it, I thought, eh, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So the other movies I'm seeing are America the Beautiful, which is tomorrow night, which is a documentary about how, towards your point and your stories here, Gretchen, a documentary how we've come so focused on how we look,
mm-hmm.
and looks and what that's played in our society. It's gotten good reviews. And then the weekend, there's 10 Items or Less, which is a new Morgan Freeman movie, which I think will come out in wide distribution, where he plays essentially himself. He plays a big star that loses his agent in the grocery store, and he has to fend for himself, and he doesn't know how. And I guess he kind of bonds with the sales clerk or something. So it looked funny from the previews. And then there's a really intriguing movie called The Ten that I'm looking forward to seeing. It stars some pretty big name comedy actors, and it's 10 vignettes. Each vignette is a comedy vignette about one of the Ten Commandments. And it's gotten really good reviews, so I'm looking forward to seeing that one. I saw pictures of Lauren Bacall. She's been there at the festival.
Wow.
Sidney Pollack, the great director. Mm-hmm. In fact, apparently they had a showing of one of his early movies, The Way We Were, which I actually just, because I have Barbara Streisand on my TV, yes, and I'm not gay, and I really like seeing it again. And apparently they had Sidney Pollack and some other people on the inside of that movie, and they did a screening of it for old time's sake. And I would have loved to have gone to that Q&A, but it was really sold out.
Oh.
And they have some other stars there, too. I mean, the movie I... So far, the two movies I've seen, they've had the director and the actors there for Q&A afterwards. So it's a pretty big festival, and hopefully there'll be time by the time I get this podcast produced for you guys to see some more films in it. Are you planning on seeing anything at all?
This is the first one?
Well, I don't know exactly how the AFI works. This is the first time the AFI has ever
been
here.
In Dallas, right.
Dallas has had other film festivals.
And it's
the biggest,
another one in April, right?
That's the USA Film Festival,
right.
which traditionally has been the biggest
the
one
biggest,
in Dallas.
Right.
And that's pretty good, too.
Right.
But it's nothing compared to this. This is a behemoth compared to the USA Film Festival.
Uh-huh.
This is the real McCoy.
Wow.
It's been fun.
Uh-huh.
The only downside is both films so far, I've gotten there about 45 minutes before, to huge lines, and you sit there, wait in line, and it's just a nuts scene. I've been to both theaters, the Magnolia and the Angelica. Crazy packed, and then they don't let you in. And by the time the movie starts, it starts a half an hour late.
Oh.
On the good side of that is that they're packing them in.
Yeah,
this is a good sign.
That is a great sign. That
I think the organizer really worried about how is this going to play.
Right.
So far, it looks like it's really packing them in, but it is a little bit of a crazy scene at each one of these theaters.
Wow.
And, yeah. So, are you planning on seeing anything?
Probably because I'm no. I'm
yeah,
be
you're
off,
a little
so
bit out of pocket.
Yeah, this week. So
yeah,
yeah. But
Well,
yeah, they sound interesting.
There's another movie coming out that I wanted to just briefly mention because I'm kind of excited about it. And it's just towards a lot of things that we talk about on this show. It's a documentary, not part of a film festival. It's coming out in limited distribution, I think in a week or two, called Maxed Out. Have you heard about this, Gretchen?
No.
Okay. So I'll just read the brief synopsis. And I think it's gotten good reviews, so I'm really looking forward to it. Maxed Out takes viewers on a journey deep inside the American style of debt, where things seem fine as long as the minimum monthly payments arrive on time. With coverage that spans from small American towns all the way to the White House, the film shows how the modern financial industry really works, explains the true definition of preferred customer, and tells us why the poor are getting poorer while the rich keep getting richer. Hilarious, shocking, and incisive, Maxed Out paints a picture of a national nightmare, which is all too real for most of us.
Yeah.
And as we've pointed out in this show several times, it is a national nightmare, and it's a severe problem. So I'm looking forward to seeing this movie has the same kind of impact that the Morgan Spurlock movie had.
Right. Supersize Me.
Supersize Me had on the fast food industry. And it is having impact on the fast food industry, I think.
Mm. Yes. Yes, I think so, too.
So that's my culture.
That's not part of the festival though, right?
Not part of the festival. This is coming out in your indie film theater in the next week or two, I think. I think it's on the coast now.
Huh. Well, maybe I'll see that next week.
Yeah.
Well, every year Fortune magazine comes out with its list of America's most admired companies. Every year.
Okay. Right.
And this is basically the definitive report card on corporate reputations. So if you want to know how the U.S. companies, the largest 1,000, plus the top foreign ones that operate in the United States fare, this is the definitive ranking. So, guess who number one is?
Oh, boy. Enron.
Yeah, right. Halliburton.
Yeah, Halliburton.
Halliburton. No. It is General Electric. And
really?
This is what I did not know about General Electric. Of the 12 companies that Charles Dow chose when he made up the original Dow Jones Industrial Average in 1896, GE is the only one still in the index.
That doesn't surprise
Isn't
me
that
there's
amazing?
Only one left, but I didn't. Wow.
Who would have thought that it was this? You know?
Yeah. I know that back when Jack Welch was a CEO, you know, of course, GE had so much, aura to it because he was considered so brilliant and such a good, people manager and business manager.
Well, they're actually making a hit with their Eco Imagination campaign.
Huh.
It's supercharging revenues while doubling their R&D budget, and they're coming up with a lot of good things for the environment. They themselves, their own company, cut $70 million in their energy bills last year alone. So they're actually practicing what they're preaching. So they're number one on the list, followed closely by your favorite retailer.
Who's my favorite retailer?
Well, your favorite food service would be Starbucks.
Right? Oh.
Starbucks has number two because it's
green. I
think
I did see that.
It's humane. It's politically correct. It sells a popular product, and it provides a comfy place to hang out. What's not to like? And they are going to open, get this, 40,000 new outlets.
My gosh.
40,000.
See, I don't know how they can... Where are they going to grow these things? In small town America? Because,
for example,
if they do it in Dallas,
I know.
I have already a Starbucks all four directions...
Within 300 feet, right?
Yeah.
Right. No, they're all over the world. I mean, they're still pretty sparse in China and Hong Kong. And
yeah.
So they're going, they'll probably be, in the Himalayas. There'll probably be a couple of branches.
Well, you know what it is funny every now and then? I'll take a big city, just a big city at random. And my favorite is Yahoo Maps because I think they do a better job than Google of mapping businesses to it. And I'll type in the business Starbucks and just see how many pop up in the density. And it's really
amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
And Walmart,
that's
too.
That's what I do for fun.
Well, that's what Walmart has the same problem. And they're opening like 1,200 more stores. But imagine when you try to put those.
Yeah.
Because they're so big.
They're so big.
But had you bought $1,000 in Starbucks stock in 1992 when they went public, what would it be worth today?
Boy, probably a lot.
$52,000?
Wow.
1,000 to 52,000.
Wow. 52 times.
Number three, Toyota Motors. Toyota is America's best automaker. Camry is the number one selling car since 2002. Lexus is the number one selling luxury car. And the Prius is, of course, the car to have in Hollywood.
Right.
So Toyota can do no wrong. Number three. Number four, Berkshire Hathaway.
What do they do?
It takes 20 years to build a reputation, 5 minutes to ruin it, says Warren Buffett. They are insurance. They own Geico.
Financial,
they own Fruit of the Loom. They're very diverse.
Oh, diversified.
They're very diversified. Southwest Airlines, number five. They actually have their 34th straight year of profitability this past year. FedEx, number six. They had been number two last year because they delivered all the Hurricane Katrina relief for free. They're number six this year. And number seven, the one that I thought you'd find most interesting, Apple. This is the first time it landed on this list. And it is now going to become America's best retailer. Surprisingly, they are set to roll out the iPhone. Do you know how many they're expecting to sell?
How many?
In 2008, they expect to sell 10 million iPhones.
Well, and I told you before in this show that I've never really been compelled to buy one of these super high telephones, cell phones, because I haven't really felt the need. And my job just doesn't demand it as much. I'm not mobile, you know, for the most part. But I might buy an iPhone.
I know you're looking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it might combine. Right now, I'm schlepping an iPod and a phone with me. And
Two devices in your pocket.
Two devices in my pocket that does more stuff.
You could be cool, too. Even cooler. There you go.
I'd be very cool. I'd be very hip at the singles bars. Hey, look at my iPhone. Let me put your number into my iPhone, baby. That's the way I talk at the single bars.
Well, maybe I don't that's why that number
I don't
there.
Do very very well. Hey, baby.
Get that deep Barry White voice going.
Hey, baby. Oh, baby, baby. Well, this is from my mom. My mom's always thinking about you, Gretchen.
All right. Hi, Mom.
She just finished reading a book that she thought either you have read or you might be interested in reading. It's called Real Toy Story by Eric Clark.
Oh, yes. I know about that story.
All right. So she goes on to describe, first of all, she recommends it if you haven't read it. She says one of the themes is that there are fewer real toys. And you've talked about this before, actually. Those with play value.
Right.
Every year, everything is electronic. It doesn't really use much imagination. The child becomes passive.
Everything's licensed, too. So you just take a stupid item and stick a picture of Mickey Mouse on it and sell it again.
Okay.
Part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another interesting subject was the Bratz dolls. Do you know what these are?
Oh, God, yes.
Targeted to
they
take...
They took over the
Barbie
spot
market.
As the number one 12-inch fashion doll.
And apparently they're marketed to very young girls, but they even wear thongs.
Oh, they are pretty scantily clad.
And my mom says
clad.
She doesn't mean on their feet.
No, they are scantily, scantily clad.
Really?
They look like hookers. They're the ones with the big lips and the big eyes.
I don't look at dolls. I have no idea. I mean, I'll go website.
And they own
check
everything.
It out.
They have their own rockin' limousine and their own sushi bar and their own spa.
Oh my gosh.
Buy all these accessories for them.
So their name, Bratz, is actually...
That is their name. And then they have individual dolls that have their own awful little names, too. But the Bratz is the line. And then they have a movie coming out, and they have a bunch
of
licensed
products. Why would the mother of a little girl buy Bratz?
It's very controversial.
That's very materialistic.
It's very controversial. They really dress like hookers.
Really?
Uh-huh. They really do. Just check it out, and you'll see. It's kind of appalling, actually, that they wear
I am intrigued.
Just amazing.
Maybe I'll buy a couple for my fantasy.
Don't tell us what you're doing with the Bratz dolls, okay, Jeff? Keep that to yourself, please.
I wonder how long it'll be before they have, you know, the Ho brand of dolls.
The blow-up Bratz.
The blow-up Bratz. Yeah, well, that way they could increase their market to...
That's right. Adult men.
Adult world. Oh, God.
So this is the one about the sweatshops, too, right? It goes on to say how the
probably.
Toys are made. Yeah.
Probably. She doesn't mention that here. But
they interviewed 200 executives, and it is pretty ugly. I have mentioned that before. And,
wow. Well, speaking about being a brat, you know what that means?
What?
That means you have to call our This and That Brat hotline. And that number is... 206-337-1670. Call us and leave a comment. It's our comment line. And we will probably play it on the air if it's clean and, you know.
Constructive.
And
thanks, Mo, for your comments from Brazil.
And fun. Absolutely. And again, the number is 206-337-1670. And it's not really our Bratz hotline, of course. But that was our transition. We're podcasting people. We know how the rules are.
We know how to transition.
We know how to do that. And I guess that's going to be the show. Do you have any closing comments?
Well, we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. And
God, that was a boring closing comment. I was expecting like a wrap-up. You know, what did we learn today?
A lot of sex, actually.
Well, it always comes down to that.
Oh, that's what it boils down to, yeah.
And apparently dolphins do it all the time. That's what I learned.
For fun.
For fun.
But how do those male bats, how do bats reproduce then if the males are going at it with each other?
Well, I'm sure there's only a percentage that are still heterosexual, you know.
Well, there you go. Yeah. You have to think about that.
Yeah. And what do they do with each other, the males? I don't know.
That's even a more interesting question to think about.
And who is studying this?
We'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it for next show.
Okay.
All right. Bye, kids.
Bye.